This is Soundcheck at 93.9 WNYC. We're live online at WNYC.org. I'm John Schaefer. Most films have a film score, but some films use music on an even deeper, more organic level. And my next guest is the film director, John Bush, who is presenting a series of films called the Yatra Trilogy, subtitled A Journey into Sacred Nature. The Yatra Trilogy takes viewers through Buddhist Southeast Asia, and integral to the visual journey through places like Bali and Java and Cambodia is the music that accompanies that spiritual path, much of it recorded on location in those places. Delighted to have John Bush joining me here in our studio this afternoon. John, welcome to Soundcheck.
Hi, John. Thanks. Great to be here.
I should start by saying Yatra, the Yatra Trilogy. The word Yatra means like journey or pilgrimage, doesn't it?
Yes. Yatra means sacred journey. It's mm-hmm. a Sanskrit word that means sacred journey or pilgrimage.
And the second of the films is the one that's being screened tonight at the Rubin Museum of Art.
Yes, tonight actually is the premiere of Prajna Earth, which is the second film in the Yatra Trilogy. And the venues within this journey are going to be Cambodia, the temples of Angkor in Cambodia, sacred Bali, and then some of the wonders of Java.
Mm-hmm. So the idea that this is Buddhist Southeast Asia, I mean, we don't generally think of Java, you know, which is largely Muslim, as a Buddhist country, although I guess there's sort of a remnant of that culture, isn't
well,
there?
Well, curiously enough, although Indonesia and Java is part of Indonesia, is the largest Muslim nation in the world. At one point, just 1,000 years ago, it was one of the pinnacles of Buddhist civilization. And one of the greatest Buddhist monuments in the world, Borobudur, is in central Java.
Mm-hmm. What kind of monument is? Is it a temple or?
It's actually a 7-level mandala stupa. It's about the size of 2 Manhattan blocks, and it's about 15 stories high.
Wow!
And it has 7 levels, representing 7 different levels of spiritual understanding, and you circumambulate around each level, and on each level there are bas-reliefs and stone carvings of the life of the Buddha, different spiritual parables and teachings. And by the time that you circumnavigate all 7 levels, you've walked about 5 kilometers.
Wow.
And it was actually created as a device for enlightenment.
That's a yatra. That's a pilgrimage.
That is the journey. Yeah.
So how did this journey begin for you?
Well, that's a big question. I'm still trying to answer it. Literally, in 1970, I journeyed overland to India through Europe and Asia to India and thought I was taking an overland trip. And then once I became familiar with the process of yatra, which is something that's practiced in India, which is taking pilgrimages to different holy sites or places, I realized that that's what I actually was on in my travels there.
So this was back in like 35 years ago almost.
Yeah, 1970.
But you weren't making films at that point.
No, I wasn't. In fact, I didn't have a camera with me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So what gave you the idea to go back many years later with a camera crew and actually to create this sort of visual meditation / documentary / travelogue or whatever it is?
Well, I wanted to really explore cinematically the possibility of pilgrimage and to share it with a wider audience and to actually go to places that people might never have the opportunity to travel to on their own. And also it gave me a chance to really see these places myself for the first time through the lens and share that with the viewer.
Mm-hmm. And we mentioned at the beginning of the segment that music really is kind of integral to the whole process. You did work with the composer David Hikes, and we can hear a little bit of his music momentarily, but you also used a lot of the kind of traditional ritual music of these various places.
Well, we wanted to give as an authentic possible experience for the viewer, so we really grounded it not just in the sights of the place, but in the sounds, both the diegetic sounds of the place and the music that came, the sacred music particularly that came from those places. What we find with David is that the opportunity to take the harmonic chant of David Hikes and the harmonic choir and put it in a universal context that delivers a certain kind of emotional base to the whole experience.
Mm-hmm. Well, David Hikes is often, he's sort of been a regular visitor here, as I guess you know, over the years. He's often talked about the importance of Tibetan Buddhist chant in developing his own harmonic singing. But the fact that it is a more universal concept, that things are by nature in harmony or out of harmony, depending on, as the case may be. Mm-hmm. So on a number of levels, he seems like a kind of a perfect choice for this film.
I felt so. It was very exciting for me to share what we had done with David's music with David, because of course he knows that this is truly universal, and yet he had never been to these places.
Mm-hmm.
But when he saw how perfectly it synced with both the places and the music that we were presenting from them, it really was a further testament to his understanding of the harmonic chant as being truly universal.
Well, we'll hear a little bit of the piece that David Hikes wrote for your film, Prajna Earth. Now, my understanding is that as we're hearing this music, we're seeing sunset at this incredible stupa, this seven-story pilgrimage site.
Yes, Borobudur.
Borobudur.
Right.
Here is some music from the film called Prajna Earth. The filmmaker John Bush is my guest on Soundcheck, and David Hikes is the composer and vocalist here. Prajna Earth is the name of the film by John Bush, my guest on Soundcheck, and the music here, also called Prajna Earth, written for this film by David Hikes, who, I think people can hear the influence of, the very deep chant of Tibetan Buddhism there. But also, John, the fact that Buddhism throughout Southeast Asia has lots of different ways of manifesting itself from country to country seems to be part of the point of your film.
Yeah, it's one of the things that we are exploring in the film, just how wide-ranging are the different expressions of Buddhism in these countries. And we're also exploring lost Buddhist civilizations where we are able to see forms of belief and worship that actually no longer exist, that, from my point of view, actually still have something to inform us with.
Hmm. Now, there were a couple of years ago, it was in the newspaper when the Taliban was still in charge in Afghanistan, there were those two towering Buddhas that were cut into the side of a mountain, which they destroyed. Was that one of the things that kind of got you going with this project?
Yes, it was. We had already had been shooting Dharma River, which was the first part of the trilogy. But seeing really how impermanent these seemingly monumental structures could be made us feel a greater urgency in bringing this to the public so that they could see it as it exists. Because even at Borobudur, for example, the top of the stupa had been blown off in 1987 by terrorists.
Uh-huh. So is there a narrative either, through the trilogy of films or within each of the three films separately?
Yes, there's about there's a sparing narration. Probably about one third of it is narration. But really, what we're trying to do is to present the viewer with a direct experience of the place. So we're only saying enough to really give them the information and to make them feel comfortable in what they're watching. But yes, it's a narration that's evolving from each film.
But in terms of a sort of literal narrative, a story being told, it seems like it's a little more abstract than that. It's more like almost like a visual meditation.
Yeah, it's a visual meditation. Basically, what we're doing is allowing the viewer to go on an inner journey as well as we're taking them on a pilgrimage to these places.
Hence the title, Yatra Trilogy. The second film is Prajna Earth. It's being screened tonight at the Rubin Museum of Art in Chelsea, and then further screenings Friday and Saturday at 3 p.m. and Sunday at 1 p.m. Details are on the Rubin Museum's website, which is rmanyc.org. We're speaking with filmmaker John Bush. When did you start making films?
Well, actually, it's a rather late vocation in life for me. I began in 1970 when I took this trip to Southeast Asia with the express purpose of doing that. Prior to that, I've been a still photographer for most of my adult life and became thrilled with the idea of movement as well as still photography. So, but I really wanted to go and discover these places and then to be able to share them. And so they're highly photogenic venues and very well suited to a cinematic experience.
Well, they're photogenic, but they're also, some of them, very inaccessible. I mean, you went to Myanmar, the former Burma. How did you even get into the country?
Well, there is a limited amount of tourists who are allowed into Burma, and that's how we were traveling. We weren't traveling as a film crew. We were traveling as tourists with happened to have quite good equipment.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't actually have to have a government guide or anybody to go with us. We had access to the country in that way. I myself have been doing Buddhist practice for more than 30 years, so I felt comfortable, and the people who we were in contact with felt comfortable with us being there. And I think what it affords the viewer is a rather intimate experience of those places.
So the first film, Dharma River, is basically in what parts of Southeast Asia?
Dharma River it's really a journey back in time. It starts in Bangkok in Thailand and then travels north into Chiang Mai, the northern regions of Thailand, then into Laos, going down the Mekong River to caves of Buddha realms, then to the Shangri-La of Luang Prabang on the Mekong River in Laos. And from there, we go to Burma, first to to the Shwedagon Pagoda in Rangoon, which is an extraordinary place that has been an active place of worship for 2,000 years. It's a large golden pagoda with hundreds of pilgrims. And then we take a journey down the Irrawaddy River and go to the lost Buddhist civilization of Bagan. And Bagan is spelled P-A-G-A-N. It's a place that has about 7,000 temples and stupas that, again, was abandoned about 900 years ago.
Wow. So it's just sitting there in the jungle and you can...
Yeah, it truly is a lost civilization. It's actually on an arid plain.
So this is in the first of the films, Dharma River. The second film being screened tonight is Prajna Earth, and that focuses, as we've said, on Cambodia and on two of the major islands of Indonesia, Bali and Java. The next bit of music that we'll hear from the film is something, I guess this is one of your own field recordings, right?
Yes, this is just a little medley of different gamelan experiences that we recorded, street processions. Then there's also a dance performance of the Ramayana, the Hindu epic that is often performed in Bali. And just to remember, this is really sacred Bali. This is a little different than the normal tourist honeymoon Bali that a lot of people know. And it's an interesting culture because it really sort of reflects life as it may have been 1,000 years ago in some of these other venues that we visit, these lost civilizations.
All right, here's some of the music that my guest, filmmaker John Bush, recorded on location while making the film called Prajna Earth. ¶¶ A sampler of Indonesian gamelan sounds, the percussion orchestra's very highly developed form of music over the last couple of thousand years. And John Bush, you recorded these while filming the movie called Prajna Earth. What are we actually seeing while these gamelans are banging and chiming and ringing?
Well, what we're seeing is a street procession in the city of Ubud, which is the cultural and spiritual center of Bali. And we're seeing a street procession of hundreds of people with several dozen gamelan musicians playing large gongs, people walking through the streets carrying large mythic beasts and animals, going to another temple for an initiation.
This is all at night.
Yeah, this is at night, and then we see a traditional Balinese dance performance with again scenes from the Ramayana,
which is a Hindu epic, and Bali is, you know, largely a Hindu island in an otherwise largely Muslim country.
Yes, actually, once again, in Java there were both Buddhist and Hindu civilizations existing simultaneously, but the last Hindu kingdom fled to Bali in the 1400s, and so now it's a little Hindu enclave, mm-hmm. In the middle of the largest Muslim nation in the world. But it's a very preserved culture, and very highly ritualized, and extraordinary in its perception of beauty.
So there is perhaps a cultural echo of a former Buddhist hegemony in Southeast Asia.
Yeah, there are a lot of Buddhist influences in Bali, although it's a Hindu country. Mm-hmm. Again, these were interpenetrating beliefs.
So there's been a lot of interest in the West in Buddhism, in Tibetan Buddhism perhaps in particular in, you know, recent years, recent decades. What do you attribute that to, and what do you think this trilogy of films can bring to that?
Well, it's an interesting analogy, I feel, because what happened in Southeast Asia about 1,000 years ago is that new spiritual concepts came into that region from India, both Buddhist and Hindu spiritual concepts that infused the local belief in animism. And I would say this is probably an analogous time in the West. We have new spiritual concepts coming in, people doing Buddhist meditation or Hindu yoga practices. And so this is really an attempt to kind of show some of the origins of this and also show how these concepts evolved in these cultures. And so it might give us a sense of what could also be happening in our culture.
Mm. Well, it's an intriguing idea that after, you know, 2,000 years, that some of these ideas are seeping into our culture in a very mainstream way. I mean, you know, a lot of people doing yoga and stuff like that without even really being aware of the sort of spiritual or sacred roots of it.
Yeah, there was an interesting study that I just read about last week, which is said that although there are maybe only 3 million Buddhists in America, that about 10 times that number feel that that Buddhist values have influenced their own spiritual lives. So we're talking about 30 million adults who somehow feel that Buddhism is relevant in some way to their lives.
That's amazing. So this film, Prajna Earth, the second of a trilogy. Now, we mentioned the first film is Dharma River, and people can actually see trailers for all three on your website.
Yes, they're all available. There's a short 3-minute trailer, but it gives you a sense of each film. You can also hear some of the music that we're playing. And then there's some, you know, descriptions of what we're doing and what each film is about. So, yes, that's www.directpictures.com.
Okay. There is a third film.
The third film is Vajra Sky, and we're actually involved in the edit of it now. It will be premiered at the Rubin Museum of Art in the spring of 2005. It's a pilgrimage to central Tibet, and we visit many of the key pilgrimage places in central Tibet and basically show that this tradition is still quite alive. It's endangered, but still quite alive in Tibet.
Well, now I have to come back to a question I asked before, and that is the question of access. Difficult to get into central Tibet?
Well, you know, the Chinese are really trying to promote it as a tourist destination, largely as a domestic tourist destination. It's a place that many, many Chinese people want to go to, but also a lot of Western tourists are beginning to go to Tibet. We had wonderful access because we had some good people taking us around. And we also were kind of flying below the radar with the beautiful thing about, you know, the equipment that we have now, digital equipment, is that we can have this very contained kind of equipment and not really draw a lot of attention to ourselves.
So. Right. You could just be tourists with really good cameras.
Exactly. That's just what it looked like.
All right. The Yatra trilogy. How many years, John Bush, have you been involved in making these films now?
Well, I started we first went in the year 2000 to Southeast Asia. I actually moved to New York 3 weeks before the disaster here in New York to begin the post-production. And, of course, the events here greatly influenced how I proceeded and the kinds of things that we were trying to bring forward.
How so?
Well, you know, I felt that the sort of spontaneous outpouring of wisdom and compassion that seemed to come forward in the city at that time really was a kind of living proof of things that I was saying, that these things that people inherently have these capacities inside them. And I think we saw the better part of humanity at that time, and it made me a believer.
Mm. So the films are basically the third film close to being done. The first two obviously are done. And the premiere of film number two in this trilogy, the film called Prajna Earth, is tonight at 7 o'clock at the Rubin Museum of Art in Chelsea. And once again, you can check out the Rubin Museum's website at rmanyc.org for details. But there will be additional screenings on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday afternoons. And if you'd like to see a trailer for all three films, go directly to John Bush's own website, which is directpictures.com. And John, there is some amazing music, and of course, the films are just terrific visually as well. I mean, I know it sounds strange to mention the music first, but it is such an integral part of what you've done.
Well, thanks. Coming from you, that's a very high compliment, John. I appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate you joining us today on Soundcheck, and we'll conclude with a little bit more of the music from the film Prajna Earth and some music that was recorded in Cambodia by one of the so-called Mahori orchestras. John Bush, my guest on Soundcheck. And actually, John Bush and composer David Hikes will both be available for a post-screening panel discussion tonight after the screening of the film at the Rubin Museum of Art. That'll do it for Soundcheck today. Tomorrow on the show, getting in touch with your own family's roots through music. We'll take your calls, and we'll also be joined by bluegrass and klezmer performer, mandolinist, and clarinetist Andy Statman, and Robert Browning, founder of the World Music Institute.